Good morning and welcome to the Mr. Relevant Podcast. It is Friday, September 9th, two, maybe 3 days before game one of the 2022 regular season of Commanders football. And there probably will only be a regular season. Here to talk about that, it's the Carson Wentz to my Ryan Fitzpatrick, Matt Turrell. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Jamie. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's been several months, maybe half a year since we spoke. I think the last time we talked, it may have been about the draft. It was definitely about the Commanders name. Let's start there. Is it growing on you?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it doesn't bother me, but I keep hearing people say that it's really detached them from the team, that like they had this, you know, they were Redskins fans. I guess some people were Washington football fans, and they just don't feel it anymore. And to me, it's like, I don't know, like I'm okay not feeling the way I felt for the last 20, whatever years. I'm okay with that. It's all right.
The name is the least of our concerns. I can't say it like non-sarcastically though. Like if I say Commanders, it has to be like some spin on the name, like Commandos, the Durs, something that's kind of like mocking it while as I'm saying it.
It has no reality yet. I really think when we make it through one actual regular season football game and something good happens, hopefully at least at some point during the game, it takes time. Do you remember, this is a weird analogy or whatever it is, but do you remember when you first named your kids, did you ever have a moment with any of them where you were like a few days in, you're like, man, did we pick the wrong name?
Is this? Yeah. You know, we were confident on the first two, and then the third, Charlie, we were a few days in and it was like, are we sure? Is that a good one?
It's weird, right? And like, yeah. with my son, I half jokingly insisted throughout the pregnancy, he's our second and youngest. So I insisted throughout the pregnancy that I wanted to call him Rex. And, you know, it was mainly just me being obnoxious and doing a bit or whatever, but like the more I talked about it, the more I was like, Rex is a pretty good name. And my wife, quite predictably, was like, absolutely not. Under no circumstances are we naming a child Rex, which is, of course, a dog's name. And I was like, fine. And we gave in and we named him Noah, which is a very good and sensible name. But every so often these days, I look at him like, deep down inside, I think you might be a Rex. So anyway, names are weird. And the Commanders have had this name for like 3 minutes and they should have named the team Rex. That's basically what I'm saying.
Yeah, at least like Noah can forge his own identity as a person in this world with a normal name. The other way, he just would have been Rex
forever. It's true. And in some ways, the Commanders are the same thing. Like, boy, they did not get any distinct brand identity, did they? They just got, you know, hey, guys, here's vague sentiments of leadership and military something, something. Let's go.
Well, the thing I don't like is like I'm about to refer to last year's team and it's not right to refer to them as the Commanders. Or if you're really going into the distant past, you know, it's not right to refer to, you know, Clinton Portis as a Commander. So you have to like, I don't know, just go with Washington, I guess. It's difficult. Before we get to this year's like win prediction or season, you know, record prediction, can you predict last year's record? Do you even remember what our record was last year?
Wow, what a spectacular question. This is the best setup for a season preview that I've ever thought of.
I know you're not Googling this. You're not in a position to. How many wins did the not Commanders have last year?
They finished with 7 wins, right? 7-10?
That's exactly right. In my memory hole, they were like 5-12. But no, they were a 7-10 season. I don't know what to make of that. It's like they were almost mid, you know, despite it seeming like a calamity.
Well, it seemed like a calamity. I think the answer is actually really easy. Every year, and God, we've been doing this for a long time, but every year when we do this, we sit around and we fluctuate between what used to be, you know, 6-10 and, you know, 10-6 was like the greatest imaginable record this team could have. And usually 6-10 was a bad season. And then, you know, you had your outlier terrible seasons. But for the most part, there's like a 3-game spectrum that they swing on. And so, you know, adjusting for the 17-game season, 7-10 is their bad season. And so it felt bad. But their good season would have been, you know, 10-7.
Well, also because it felt bad in a particular way as well. Like their quarterback gets hurt week 1. The defense, which was supposed to be the strength, is weak. you know, Young and Sweat are supposed to be like these breakout stars, talking about breaking like the combo sack record for teammates, which is like 38. I think they ended up with 6. And, you know, it was like also a season where they, I think it started off like 2-2, and then they lost 4 in a row. And you're like, oh, this, you know, it's curtains. And then they won 4 in a row. And it was like, oh, this, there's a little life here. Maybe we're getting our December run, you know, to remember. And then they lost 4 in a row again. So it was kind of just like, there's nothing really to get excited about except that one little midseason bump. And I mean, really like a remarkably, you know, like a season to forget. Did anything happen last year that's like exciting to think back on, to think like of fondly? Or to even make you feel good about the future?
Nothing that happened last year feels connected to the future. Part of that is the name change, which does, you know, create a disconnect, especially since they had this like interim name for, but were they just the football team for 1 year or was it 2 years?
I think it was 2 because they made the playoff. The playoffs was the football team.
Oh, that's right. The football team made the playoffs.
The 7-9 playoff team. Yeah.
Right.
Because it was WFT happened.
Right. All right. Which is one of the best t-shirts you all ever made. So that all feels disconnected. There was nothing that came out of last year where I felt like, hey, well, they can build on that. You know, one of the things that might have been was Antonio Gibson had some decent numbers, although not spectacular. And you could have been like, hey, third season breakout coming. But instead, they appear to have looked at it and thought, boy, that guy fumbles a lot. And then they tried to replace him.
And he fumbled in like his first carry of the preseason after they drafted Brian Robinson. Yeah.
Yep.
Its own whole story.
Yeah. At what point, I have so many questions. Like, first of all, how many more Washington players have to get shot before they can change the team name to the Bullets? That's my first question. And my second question is, when Brian Robinson comes back, is he going to have like some sort of shooting related nickname, Bullet Brian Robinson, or, you know,
Bulletproof.
I love it. I love it.
That's not bad. I mean, I feel bad joking, but it sounds like he's good. Like he's like walking around without much of a limp, like a week later.
Yeah.
Like it sounds like he really, you know, really lucked out.
Yeah, there's
relative to what it could have been.
Well, yes. I mean,
yeah.
On the much wider spectrum of outcomes of bullet wounds than there is in the outcomes of Washington season.
Have other commanders been shot?
Well, I mean, there's the obvious, but not commanders. There's the obvious Washington football tragedy. But I feel like didn't somebody else get shot last year? Like just sort of mildly shot?
No, I mean, I feel bad joking about this, but I feel this sounds familiar. Like there was a recent commanders related shooting beyond Brian Robinson. And I can't remember what it was.
Well, my real takeaway from the Brian Robinson thing is that I guess I just fully don't understand how bullets work. I've seen Three Kings. Three Kings has that vivid depiction of how a bullet can cause like fluid to fill the lungs or can cause sepsis. So like, I get that. And I've also,
I saw The Matrix. You could see them better.
Oh, I didn't think of that. Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah. I've seen lots of movies. I've taken very mild, casual, like, hey, you know, gun safety courses or whatever, but nothing that was like explaining how to extract a bullet or what can do. But I do not understand how somebody who makes their living with their legs can take a bullet or two, I believe, in the leg and be like, cool. I'll be back at work in just a couple weeks. Like it doesn't.
That seems pretty miraculous. But can we back up? You've taken casual gun safety courses.
I mean, casual is the wrong word, but yeah, like just sort of normal, like shooting range type gun safety courses. Not like full on gun ownership, gun safety courses.
I had no idea that you were strapped. This is a revelation.
No, I'm deeply understrapped. As the world continues to deteriorate, I realize just how few guns I actually have, which is zero.
Would you say you have like a gun or like just like a gun supply? Like, how large is the safe?
I would say I do not have a gun at all, but I do know which of my friends have guns, and I'm like, boy, maybe I'm on the wrong side of the debate on this one. I just don't know.
I know what I was trying to reference there, but I butchered it. Was Wayne's World. Like, I don't have a gun, let alone enough guns to necessitate a rack.
That's right. Yeah. No,
so I haven't seen it in like 30 years.
That's a movie that's just lost to time, right? I mean, have you shown
it to your kids? I feel like I could watch that with my kids and they would like it, but I never think to watch it with my kids.
Although I think we talked about it at some point, I watched Airplane with my kids, and the amount of explanation you have to do for the casual throwaway jokes, like, oh, well, here's who Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is. Let me give you the entire history of this basketball player and also actor. I imagine there's a lot of that with Wayne's World also.
Just follow him on Twitter.
Exactly.
Okay, so last year, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to build up towards is like my complete disinterest in this year's team. Because coupled with the, you know, 30-year run of sadness and last year being a forgettable season with no real building blocks for the future that materialized, on top of all that, like, what did they do this offseason that would get you fired up? Like, there's a few interesting draft picks, but, you know, there's not like an Aiden Hutchinson, you know, franchise-defining player stepping in.
Well,
I don't know. My pulse on the team is just like dead. Like, I just have no interest.
I think there's a pretty easy answer, and it's part of why I think this first week's game is beyond crucial for this team, which is the Carson Wentz move is a big move, and everybody in the universe is just exceptionally down on Carson Wentz for very viable reasons, and especially the specific way he finished last season, but also just his overall career. But if he were to go out on Sunday and look good, look just like, I'm not saying like look spectacular, but just look like good Carson Wentz, all of a sudden, I think there's an interesting story there. Now, if he goes out and he's, you know, trying to prove something and he really looks spectacular, then there's a definite story there. But right now, we all assume he's going to look mediocre at best, like every Washington quarterback has for 20 years, no matter what they looked like prior to coming here or what they looked like after. And there's no excitement there. But if he actually looked good, if that occurred, suddenly I think the narrative of the team changes drastically.
That's true. I mean, Wentz was the headline move in the offseason, but I didn't even mention him because of how terribly unexciting he is.
I remember a time where I was like, I'm quite sure I'm on record on this podcast being like, I can't believe we're going to have to face Wentz twice a year. Philly is like so lucky they settled that position.
Well, he was like a young MVP candidate at one point, but that was like 5 years ago.
It was 5 years ago. But I mean, first of all, there are narrative precedents for quarterbacks who are very good early, have a long middle gulf, and then return late and have a resurgence. There is athletic and narrative precedent for that. He's also on his last chance. There's ways to spin the story where it's exciting. For some reason, none of them are coming across. I think the team also like has no offensive identity. I don't think, you know, it's not like they have an offensive coordinator where you're like, oh, this guy's bringing in really live offense, or even the opposite. He's really committed to ball control. It's just kind of like, hey, it's Scott Turner. Remember Norv Turner? It's like that, only less so.
But yeah. Yay. I mean, it's, yeah, Terry McLaurin's like a high-end receiver, but not, you know, one of the Cooper Kupp, Justin Jefferson types. And Antonio Gibson's a sort of exciting running back, but nobody beyond Washington really cares. And then there's a bunch of guys who are kind of, you know, on the roster. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's a disservice to the Logan Thomases and Curtis Samuels of the world, but really, what have they done to really distinguish themselves?
Well, it's the same thing again, is especially coming off last season. Logan Thomas two seasons ago seemed great, and we were excited for him coming into last season. Then last season, he gets injured. He's kind of just, you know, he never comes all the way back. Then he's injured again. Hope's not high for him. Same thing for Curtis Samuel. Going into when he was signed, there were people who were like, oh, he's going to be this, you know, novel piece in the offense. He's going to unlock the offense. And then
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. He gets injured. I mean,
furthermore, like the offensive line, like, is there a Pro Bowler on the resume of that entire group? Is there like one Pro Bowl?
I think so, but I think it's all like guys who made the Pro Bowl like 20 years ago with the Panthers or something. I don't think there's any.
Which is to say, like, they might be a solid group, but it's like not exciting. Can't hang your hat on it. Like, the Carson Wentz thing, I guess the case for would be he has played at a very high level. He was like at an elite level with Philly at one point. Fall from grace, but, you know, last year at Indy, his numbers were pretty good, you know, and they should have been a playoff team. It ended poorly, but, like, you know, he had like a 3-1 TD to INT ratio. You'd like to see that. And then the final piece would be, like, look what Washington has had a quarterback the last several seasons or decades. I mean, it's got to be an upgrade, right? You know, so that, I guess that would be the case for. The case against would be, you know, I'm looking at Steven Ruiz's QB rankings on The Ringer, and I like Steven, and he's, you know, I think a good analyst. He's got Carson Wentz as the 27th best quarterback in the league. As a point of reference, Jared Goff is 25, and Davis Mills is 29. So, like, in my mind, Carson Wentz is, like, kind of mid-level QB, like, in that middle tier. But the reality, if you're looking at it league-wide, is he's probably a bottom third guy that we're paying $30 million for, and he's surrounded by an average roster.
The money to me is just totally irrelevant. Like, they had money they could have spent and didn't spend it. So for whatever reason,
they're not doing that.
Like, so that doesn't bother me. I don't know that I agree with the assessment that he's, I mean, he may be bottom third of the league in the sense that he might be like 21st or 22nd. I don't think he's like drastically bad. I think he's light years better than Taylor Heinicke. And if you take away where we believe he is now based on last year, based on everything else, I will say that he has the highest ceiling of any Washington quarterback since maybe RG3's rookie year, if you want to believe that RG3's, you know, that there was a version of RG3 that could continue what he did.
That's probably right, because we always felt like Cousins' ceiling was like kind of in that middle tier.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he could get to like the 10th best quarterback, maybe. And like, Wentz has already been there.
The really weird thing is that if you believe that RG3 maximized his potential, you know, or that Shanahan maximized RG3's potential in that 1 year and that it was never going to get any better for him, then I think Wentz's ceiling is actually the highest for any Washington quarterback since I literally cannot remember. I mean, who would it be prior to RG3?
I just have a hard time seeing that, like, best case scenario for Wentz.
I feel like
his best case scenario is probably like last year, but it doesn't end poorly.
His last year, if it doesn't end poorly, we would have killed for any of the last 20 years, 25.
Yeah, I mean,
years.
If he throws for 3,500 yards and 25 touchdowns with like 8 picks and we win 9 or 10 games, I'm pumped. That's great. Yeah. But I feel like that is like the best case Carson Wentz scenario.
How many wins did the Colts wind up with last year?
I think they had 9 or 10. Didn't they just miss the playoffs because of that like last week loss to the Jaguars?
I don't know. I think there's an awful lot of assumptions being made about the quality of the roster that Wentz was playing with in Indianapolis.
They went nine and eight.
That I'm not sure I agree with. I don't know. The point is, at this time of the year, you say, what is there to be really excited about? Nothing. Literally nothing. In the preseason, they looked exactly like they've looked for the last however many years. Every year they look like this in the regular season, they look like this in the preseason, they just look like they look, and it is boring. But this is the one moment where there is any excitement, because on Sunday we're going to see what they do, and the chances are very, very good that they're going to look the same again. They're going to be boring, but for like this one, you know, 2 day span between the Thursday night kickoff and the Sunday kickoff, you know, maybe there's something there.
Hey, they're favored to win.
Which is, you know, stupid. I would
Jacksonville at home. I mean, yeah, somebody's got to be favored.
Not only can I not believe that I can pick against Washington and get points, but I would consider taking Jacksonville in an elimination pool. In fact, I am considering taking Jacksonville in an elimination pool. Like, I think that they outclass Washington at every position on the field. So I'm not quite clear why Washington is favored.
I mean, probably because they won 3 games last year or whatever, and they're in Washington. Like, you know, I get why Washington would be slightly favored in that game.
I don't get it at all. They had a different coaching staff last year. That was arguably the worst coaching staff the NFL has, I don't know, possibly has seen in a decade, at least, possibly longer.
Should be an upgrade. Well, it is nice. Like, I feel like this could be the high point. If Washington wins game one, then they have Detroit game two, week mm-hmm. two. You know, so like, not that either one of those games is a gimme, but at least they're playing teams that are like in their weight class, you know, and maybe that's a scenario where if they start off 2-0 before their schedule gets meaty, that's exciting. And I think we'll all be fired up, but I'm also expecting 1-1.
Oh yeah, 1-1, lock it in. I think they're going to lose the first one, and then everybody's going to panic, and then they'll win the second one, but it'll be an annoying close win and unconvincing in every way. But it could go the other way around. But either way, yeah, no, absolute 1-1 start, totally.
Another thing that, you know, I mentioned Ruiz's QB rankings with wins at 27th in the league. Another thing that gave me like just a little taste of like the national perspective was listening to Bill Simmons' podcast, and he's going through the over-unders for the league, and he gets to Washington and he says that Washington has the worst QB head coach combo in the NFL, 32 out of 32. Now, I don't think he like actually crunched the numbers or whatever, but just that we would be so bad in this regard that he would just throw that out there. That kind of opened my eyes a little bit, because in my mind, Carson Wentz and Ron Rivera are both kind of like mid-level guys, you know, like Wentz is wherever he's 15th or he's 20th or whatever, best quarterback. Rivera seems like the definition of kind of like a middle ground NFL head coach. So I just thought that was interesting that, like, you know, the two of the most, if not the most important people in your organization are regarded by a national observer as the worst combo in the league.
Well, it's interesting because I would say that mid-level plus mid-level is going to be the worst, because take, for example, I was just trying, I hadn't heard that pod yet. So I was, as you said, I was trying to run through and I was like, well, Mike McCarthy is vastly worse than Ron Rivera, but Dak is better. And I know Simmons is actually pretty low on Dak, but like, if you have one thing that's good,
you would take Dak McCarthy over Rivera wins. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think this is one, and actually, it sort of speaks to Washington as a whole over the last two decades, is that they're just so mediocre. They're never even bad enough to be like, you know, funny or sad or anything. They are the most 7-10 organization in history. That is what they are in everything, every aspect they do. I mean, I think of myself fondly as a real 7-10 kind of official team blogger from back in the day. It's just, that is how this team operates.
Do not sell yourself short. You were a 7-9 blogger. There was only 16 games then.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. My bad. But I like to think that if I had had another couple decades on the job, I could have gotten to 7-10.
But by the way, QB coach combos, I was just like thinking about this. I was like, come on, we got to be better than like the Texans. They have Davis Mills. Davis Mills and Lovie Smith. I might rather have Wentz and Rivera. I think I might go with that. That's close.
So the counter argument there is that Lovie Smith and Rivera are pretty much a wash to me. And
yeah.
Davis Mills, you could, if you want to look at it, depends what you want to look at. Davis Mills is unproven, and you can imagine a future career.
At least he's ascending. Yeah.
Whereas if you turn it around and you say, we've seen Wentz's potential heights, and if he can reach those again, if they can unlock that again, he blows Davis Mills out of the water. But nobody on earth believes that's going to happen. I mean, like, when I say there's a narrative path to it, the only one I can think of, the only one that I like cling to, is Kurt Warner. And I'm not saying that Wentz ever was as good as Kurt Warner at his height, or that he ever could be. But Warner started out like, you know, crazy on fire out of nowhere. Then we had that terrible long middle stretch with he got bad with the Rams, and he was terrible with the Giants, and then he resurfaced with Arizona.
That's right.
And
he was on the Giants. Almost forgot about that.
Suddenly remade himself. Yeah, I mean, there is a very similar career path of bouncing around and being like a laughing stock. And I remember being happy when the Giants would put him in, and I was upset when they pulled him out and finally went to Eli, because like, he was bad. And then when he was on that Super Bowl Cardinals team, he was great again. So
yeah, that was awesome.
There is a version of this story that plays out like that. And I mean, if you wanted to go out of your way to compare Wentz to Kurt Warner, like, you know, big Christian white guys, like there's you could do it. You could make the comparison. I think that's as far as it goes.
Aren't a majority, I mean, historically speaking, aren't a majority of quarterbacks big Christian white guys?
I guess it depends what scope you're looking at. Like, over the full scope of NFL history, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, in diminishing numbers, yes. Modern game. But
big Christian white guys from schools with North in their name?
Yeah, the smaller school factor, yeah. Okay, yeah. So just as I was looking at this, like, other bad QB coach combos, I was like, oh, Baker Mayfield and Matt Rhule, who would I rather take? You know, it's a little bit of a wash. Geno Smith and Pete Carroll.
Hang on. You know, I think Rule and I can make the argument Rule and Mayfield. Rule is markedly worse than Rivera, and Mayfield is almost identical to Wentz.
I think Mayfield and Wentz are identical, except like Mayfield, they got him Mayfield for like, you know, 10% of the
cost. I don't understand why anybody cares about that. Who cares? It's sunk funds are sunk. All we're looking at is what's going to happen on Sunday.
Washington actually traded picks.
Yeah, who cares?
As well. Like, it's not just $30 million. It's also like whatever picks.
Yeah, they gave up De'Ami Brown and what other failed second or third round pick do they have? Yeah,
but I agree that like the outlook for this year in terms of like quality of quarterbacking, Mayfield wins is pretty much a wash. But I do think that Carolina played that hand significantly better than Washington played its hand with Wentz.
That's great. I don't understand. I cannot wrap my head around.
I just don't care.
Yes, exactly. Like, whatever. All we can look at now is where they are now, where they're going to be for next year. And I would rather have, not only would I rather have Rivera and Wentz over Rule and Mayfield, I would rather have the entire Washington draft situation, coaching staff status, et cetera, for next year than the Panthers situation. So maybe
last,
that's just
me. Last thing on QB coach combos. Can you name the head coach of the Chicago Bears?
I absolutely can. I don't. It's Eberflus, no. Right?
You nailed it. It's Matt Eberflus. Yeah. I've never even heard of Matt Eberflus.
He was
I'm shocked that there can be a head coach of the Chicago Bears who I literally have never heard his name.
Well, the funny
I'm really slipping.
The funny thing is, I went with his last name because I was like, I think his first name's Matt. And then like, no, wait, I just think that because my first name is Matt.
Yeah,
I was like,
wait, no, Rex. It's Rex Eberflus.
Yeah. Didn't they have a previous head coach or two whose names were Matt?
I'm Matt like, Nagy, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And who was before him? Who was the guy with the glasses, the nerd guy with the glasses? Doesn't matter.
I don't remember.
It doesn't matter. But anyway, I was like,
I'm realizing the Bears are remarkably similar to the Commanders these past several decades.
Yeah, this is true.
There's three rookies I'll mention as maybe you could get excited. I mean, I think we were all getting excited about Brian Robinson before he got carjacked. Mm-hmm. Jahan Dotson seems to have a little heat, like a lot of positive vibes around him coming out of preseason, I think. But like, I haven't watched him play for a second.
He reminds me, vibes only. Literally vibes only. He reminds me so much of Terry McLaurin. Because I remember when they drafted McLaurin and he was supposed to be a special teams ace and people were kind of like, why did they take this like good leader special teams ace in the third round? And then you kept hearing word out of camp. They're like, I don't know, man, this guy looks good. And then they didn't spotlight him in the preseason specifically because they believed they had something and they kept it under wraps. And I keep getting those same vibes from Dotson. Like just everything we've heard is positive. Everything we've heard about him as a person, as a player on the field, and yet they didn't show anything in preseason. So like, I'm hoping that it's a repeat of that one and that all of a sudden, you know, they open up and they've got these two, you know, legitimate receivers, which I don't think has happened on this team since Santana Moss and whoever the other guy was that was okay with Santana Moss.
Dude, Anthony I was going to say, when the hell did we have two good receivers?
I don't know. I started the sentence and then trailed off.
I mean, the last several years, there's been nobody like.
No. We had Garcon and DeSean Jackson. There was that combination.
Garcon and Jackson, yes. And that was post RG3, right? With Jackson, that was like Kirk Cousin time frame.
It was both, wasn't it? I thought,
because
when DeSean Jackson came over, he had to switch his number.
Jackson was with Washington 14, 15, 16.
Yeah. Okay. So he did overlap with RG3 for a bit.
But and he had 2,000 yard seasons. So 14 and 16. Yeah. So it's been like half a decade since we had two good receivers since the Garcon and Jackson combo.
And actually, at that point, they also had, what's his name? He showed up in the Bills game last night out of nowhere. Jameson Crowder as well. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. On this podcast, I predicted that Jameson Crowder would break Art Monk's franchise receptions record.
Well, I mean, you were close. He's still alive.
I mean, I just pictured him, and I saw him last night catching a few passes for the Bills. I was like, this dude is going to catch 80 passes a year for a decade. And yeah, it just didn't happen. Anyway, okay, so Dotson, excited to see him. Shout out Sam Howell, 2022 inductee into the preseason Hall of Fame. Fantastically fun preseason run for Sam Howell. And I also live in UNC country. So a lot of Sam Howell fans in these parts. I don't know. The backup quarterback's always popular. Is there anything special with him?
Oh, well, what I thought was interesting is that while, yes, he's definitely a preseason Hall of Famer, there did seem to be at least some genuine thought of he might actually be viable as a starter at some point, you know, if he develops a bit, as opposed to, not to speak ill of the dead, but, when Colt Brennan was having his preseason success, smart people everywhere were like, chill out. He cannot play in this league. It is never going to happen. And it never did. And same thing with many of the other preseason, star quarterbacks. But there seems to be some sense that Howell might amount to something at some point.
I mean, I like having him on the roster. I like having, whatever he was, a sixth rounder who, with some pedigree, a year and a half ago, maybe even just a little more than a year ago, before last year's UNC season kind of went south. I mean, he was in the talk as, one of the top quarterbacks in that draft class. And, so it's like, who else is the future QB on this roster? I don't know. Maybe you think Wentz is going to have his Kurt Warner resurgence, but he could be it.
And I do think there's the version of the season where it goes the way everybody expects and Wentz is terrible and he has 1 year with the team and he's gone. And going into next season, I think there could be a very exciting version of the season where you say, well, we believe Howell can be our starter, so we've got QB squared away. And all of a sudden you can use your high draft pick either to trade it or to pick, you know what I mean? Like there's an interesting narrative going into next season. So I don't know.
So for this season, what is your predicted record?
Oh, probably 7-10, right? I mean, why mess with success? They're the most 7-10 organization in history.
Well, 7-10 last year, the over under that I've seen for them win total wise is 7.5. I like over on that. I'm not sure why. I think my thinking is that last year, most of what could go wrong went wrong and they still got to 7 wins. This year's schedule should be easier. And hopefully not as many things go wrong. I did go game by game and just off the cuff give the Washington a percentage chance of winning. So this week against Jacksonville, I gave them a 0.6 chance of winning, so 60% chance to get 0.6 points, 0.6 wins for week one. I did that for all 17 games and I got to 7.95.
Wow.
So I'm going with 8-9. On the season.
Wow, look at you, that optimist.
Yeah, I'm going over.
I did not expect you to be this rabid, frothing at the mouth, crazed Commanders fan, but look at you. You think they're going to light the world on fire.
I just tried to take back of the napkin look at the record and be like, look, when they're at San Francisco, I think I gave them a 30% chance of winning. When they're home against the Giants, I think I gave them a 50 or 55% chance, So really just looking at it through that lens and adding up the totals. Yeah. I don't know. The over-under is probably pretty accurate. I'd go slight over on it.
Yeah. Without even having done it numerically the way you just laid out, although I like that, I think that they are so average that they have somewhere around a 50-50 shot at almost any game they're in. And I think the ones where they are slightly less likely to win outweigh the ones where they're slightly more likely to win to the tune of 7-10. That's kind of where I wind up. I hope I'm wrong. And the one thing that could change my mind and actually get me excited is if they come out and they score a bunch of points and they win. And I actually don't even care if the defense looks good because I think the defense has looked terrible. And I don't think Jack Del Rio is very good for some reason.
Is he still the coordinator? Yeah.
I don't know. Somebody must think he's good because it's not like they're keeping him around for his sparkling personality and good PR. But if they were even just to score a bunch of points in the first week, I would get excited. That at least would be fun to watch. I would rather them go 4-13 and lose 31-30 repeatedly than win 7 games 17-14. I'm so sick of it. I'm so sick of the boring football with the boring results and then the boring record. It's enough.
Yeah, they're fucking boring. And it's like, here's the thing. Like, I'm predicting 8 and 9 this year. Last year, I'm pretty sure I predicted 9 and 8 after their 7 and 9 division championship. But that's that prediction of 9 and 8, like, felt so much more positive than this year's prediction of 8 and 9. Because last year, coming into the season, we felt like we were building something. And, like, we might have a really good defense. And Fitzpatrick was at least fun, and we'll get a real quarterback next year. You know, that sort of thing. And I don't know, this year, it's just, there's just no momentum to it. You know, so although, even though, like, the record is, like, one win different, this year just feels like a kind of a world apart from the modicum of excitement that we had coming into last season.
Although, in hindsight, having excitement for last season seems frankly insane. Like, think about the things we've complained about on this pod. Like, the quarterback was an aging journeyman who, with the best will in the world, you were going to get a year or two out of.
It'd be really fun, though.
Yeah, he did have a beard. That's true. I forgot about that. Draft class was completely unremarkable and, in fact, wound up underperforming their unremarkable status.
Jamin Davis, was that the first rounder?
Yeah. And De'Ami Brown was the second rounder.
The point is,
everything else besides those two things was pretty much identical to what it is now. So, like, having been excited for it, I guess we were more excited for the defense because they had looked vaguely good against Ben DiNucci and whoever else. But I don't know. In hindsight, being excited for last season seems really stupid. And being, at least this season, I can say, I mean, assuming 17 games of health. Nothing, making no further assumptions, just 17.
We have a relatively healthy season.
But last season, would you have rather had Ryan Fitzpatrick going into last season or Carson Wentz going into this season? Which one, if you were told they're going to be healthy for 17 games?
I mean, it's kind of like there's a difference here between the head and the heart. Like, the head is like, yeah, Carson Wentz, of course. The heart was happier with Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, but I think the heart would have turned on Ryan Fitzpatrick 3 games in after he lost 2 of
11
them
picks.
Catastrophic fashion. Yeah. And I mean, that may still happen with Wentz, but I just feel like both the floor and the ceiling are significantly higher with Carson Wentz. I don't know. It's hard, but the problem is I say that, I don't believe it's going to happen, but I don't know.
Here's the thing. We're predicting 7 or 8 wins. But the vibes are awful.
Vibes suck. Well, that's the biggest thing they need to pull off on Sunday is they need to somehow inject some positive vibes, whether it's by scoring a lot of points, looking super competent. I guess if the defense inexplicably did look dominating, that'd be great. I mean, hell, if just nothing catastrophic happens on or to FedEx Field, that would be a minor win. Like, it doesn't collapse. Yeah. It doesn't cripple any players. Nothing, you know. Awful happens, you know, in the sewage.
Labor Day weekend, former Mr. Irrelevant, Redskins in Maryland, Terps correspondent JP Finley was with his lovely family down here in Wilmington, North Carolina. And we got to meet up. Just hung out on the beach. Nice little scene, kids running around. And we were just talking about, you know, his work with, you know, whatever, The Fan and NBC Sports Washington. And I just felt so bad, even though he's so good at what he does and has had like an awesome run and is building a great career. I just felt so bad that he has to cover this team all the time.
I feel the same way. I've texted.
We just have to talk about them every day.
Yeah. I've DM'd. I can't remember if it was with him or with his co-host Pete Haley, or maybe with somebody else who I was on the beat with back in the, I don't know who it was, but like, I feel so bad for those people. And I know there's a lot of perks and I know they love being involved and I know it makes them happy, but just for me, like, it's fun that we do this every so often. I'd love if we can get back to weekly. That'd be great. If we don't, that's great too. I like paying attention to them, but the thought not only of having to talk about them, but also having to be a public face for people to complain about them, that's what people talk to you about when they see you, like, God, what a miserable experience that must be.
I love talking about this team to you exactly twice each offseason and then maybe once per week in the season. And that is
tops.
I guess above and beyond that, that's what the money's for. Yeah. JP.
Yeah, seriously. I hope JP is paid significantly more than I think, you know, local beat guys are paid. I hope his salary scale
he's definitely making above. More than us with the pod. I mean, we had that one sponsor a few years back.
Oh, yeah, the real estate guy.
Yeah, real estate guy. And I'm going to spill some industry secrets here. He did not actually pay for that.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah, but he was an enthusiastic listener. I appreciated his enthusiasm.
Yeah, well, that's fair. Well, so if anybody else is enthusiastic and wants us to sponsor them, just let us know. And as long as you're not, you know, actively committing war crimes or whatever, I'm sure.
They sponsor us. They just don't pay anything.
All right. I got it. I'm so confused by this. All right. Well, I feel like we've talked out Washington.
And by the way, just so it doesn't get lost, your prediction is that they are going to lose to Jacksonville on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm gonna stake out that corner. I'll pick them in the eliminator. I'll pick Jacksonville in the elimination pool.
I would love to say that. I would love to say and love to see that they win a shootout. How fun would that be? But this just feels like one of those shitty like 20-17 games. I'm gonna go with Washington in like an ugly win.
I think Washington goes up big early. Everybody gets vaguely hopeful, and then they get shredded. I think that this is where Trevor
I know what you're talking about.
The guy, the young quarterback. I think this is where he starts like
Trevor Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence. This is where he starts being impressive and starts earning his, you know, overall first round status is the second half of this game.
If they get their asses beat by Jacksonville, I feel like everybody's seat gets hot immediately.
Yes, absolutely. Also, anybody who was voted yes in your poll about if we should bring this pod back, if they get boat raced by Jacksonville, I think you can look forward to, you know,
run that poll again.
I don't know, semi-weekly pods at best for the first part of the season, and then yes. God knows. Yeah, it's this pod seat gets hot if they look terrible. Well, you watching anything?
Oh man, what am I watching? House of the Dragon, of course.
Yeah,
you watching that?
Yeah, I'm digging it. How about you?
Yeah, for sure. I thought it was hilarious how like episode one was like, we have to play every hit. There must be prominent dragon action. There must be nudity, preferably in a brothel setting. There must be some like, you know, semblance of incest or hint at incestual relationship. Like it was all of the kind of like overt nods to what made Game of Thrones not necessarily great, but, you know, notable to begin with.
How many pods are you listening to about House of the Dragon?
I listen to The Watch when they talk about it, and then a little bit of like, I think it's called Talk the Thrones, but I'm not so into the show that I need that much content around it.
I like most of it. As you know, like I liked Joanna Robinson before The Ringer brought her on. I enjoy her podcasting work. I am staggered by the amount of content they turn out after each Hot D episode. I think it's literally been 7 hours of podcasts for each episode. And the episodes, you'll note, are not 7 hours long. They are, what, 55 minutes? It is an insane ratio of commentary to actual text. Mm-hmm. It is bonkers.
Yeah. I mean, I'm enjoying it. I'm pleased. Like, I just love being in this world and having a show to look forward to once a week. I love the cadence of it, the once a week drop where then you can kind of look forward to it and then listen about or read about it. Like, I'm just glad to have that sort of like weekly tentpole show in my life.
Yep. And I was also genuinely surprised by how happy I was to be back in that world. Like I thought I was pretty done with it after how badly the last show ended. But pretty much as soon as we got back in, I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot. I liked this stuff. Like, this used to be fun.
I was fine with the last show. I was fine with the ending. I feel like everybody shits all over it. Come on.
I really do.
Everybody shits all over every ending ever.
Yeah, that's 100% true.
Except for 6 Feet Under.
Yeah. And St. Elsewhere.
St. Elsewhere, Jesus. Are you watching the Lord of the Rings show?
I've tried to watch it 3 times and I've fallen asleep every time, which is very true to my reaction to Lord of the Rings, which is that I like it, but I never get into it the first time through. So I'll get there eventually. I just haven't.
I did not watch the trilogy. I think I read The Hobbit maybe once long ago. I don't know. I need somebody to tell me that like this show is a banger.
My wife and I have a running joke is a bit much, but there was a point very early in our marriage where she was like, you should read to me. Like, I don't always want to sit up and read, but I enjoy stories. Like, well, why don't you read to me? I was like, well, my dad used to read The Hobbit to me as a kid. Let's start with that. That's a good one to read. And The Hobbit starts with like this sort of essay narrative description. Some hobbits are hobbits live in a hole in the ground. Some hobbits have fur on their feet and whatever. And she used to fall asleep by the description of the second hobbit, like two paragraphs in. So it was somehow deeply appropriate that that's exactly what happened to me in this show three times. They're like, this is Galadriel the elf. And I'm like, like whatever. So I don't know, but I'll get there. I really want to watch it. It looks great visually. I like the story. I have deep emotional ties to, you know, as I said, my dad used to read me these books when I was like a little kid. So, you know, I don't know, but no, I haven't watched it yet. Did you watch, you didn't watch Sandman by any chance, did you?
No.
Okay. Yeah, you shouldn't. It's so far out of your wheelhouse that I don't even think you can see it from your property.
They're my favorite show probably of the summer. The one that like comes to mind quickest is The Bear, and you famously all over The Bear.
I famously said I thought it was a little self-important and self-serious. I never finished it. I'm stalled halfway through.
How did you not like The Bear?
Because I really liked the kitchen scenes in The Bear, and I really wanted to kill the guy who calls him cousin. I can't remember.
Yeah, yeah. He's like the manager of the former
manager
restaurant. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That I hated that guy so much. I hated every time
he was great, by the way. Well, I mean, one of the best characters of the year. Yeah.
Terrific. Looking forward to eventually re-encountering him. I didn't like anything when they got away from the kitchen. So I'm excited for, I know there's the episode that is like entirely set in the kitchen, but I only liked the kitchen stuff.
It's like a single shot. Yeah. There's like long form journalism about that one shot. That's like a 17 minute sequence. I loved The Bear. I loved all the characters. I loved the music. I loved the way it looked. Like, the world that it was set in is like a world apart from my own. Like, I don't know, these guys in Chicago, like a lot of blue collar activity happening. I just loved it. I loved the show.
Have you considered growing your hair out like the lead in that show? I think that would be a good look for
you. I'm in process. Yes.
Amazing.
Loved The Bear. Not as much, but I'm into Reservation Dogs.
Haven't tried it yet.
Watch that one. Nope. Yeah, that's like a really delightful show where you don't know where you're going to go each episode. It's unlike anything I've seen. Totally recommend it. Like The Bear, I think there's a commonality in that, like, they're sort of like half hour episodes that are, it's not a comedy, but it's funny as shit, you know? Like,
yeah.
And there's moments within that can just like, you know, pull your heartstring unexpectedly.
I will say I do like a half hour show. That part is nice.
Yeah. I like that you referred to House of the Dragons as Hot D. I've heard that a couple times now. Is that what people are calling it?
That's out there in these streets, that's what they call it. Absolutely. I'm trying to think. I feel like there have been a lot of good movies, a lot of good, like, sort of pop, easy to watch movies. Like, obviously, everybody talked about Top Gun Maverick. I assume you loved Top Gun Maverick.
You're a dad. I'm not like a Top Gun guy, so I like, you know, wasn't like all excited to see it, but we saw it with the family at a drive-in theater, actually, and it was just such a crowd pleaser.
Yep.
You know.
We saw it online.
Walked away from it like, you know, queuing up Academy Awards or anything.
Yeah, you're not looking for the further Maverick expanded universe or whatever.
I don't need that. I love the Val Kilmer part, so that was really cool.
That was good. Did you watch Prey?
No, I should.
I loved
Prey.
I thought Prey.
That's
was
like
great.
That's like the prequel to the Predator.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that what the gist of it is?
The gist of it. So it's basically a Native American community in, I guess, the 19th century, 18th century. I don't remember what year it is. I guess it's probably late 1700s. No, whatever. No. Whatever. Doesn't matter. Point is, Native American. Predator shows up. Originally, apparently, they wanted to make it and not announce that it was a Predator sequel, just pitch it as a horror movie set in, you know, colonial Native American whatever, and you would find out when you watched it that it was a Predator prequel. But either way, I thought it was great. I really enjoyed that.
I gotta check that out.
Everything Everywhere All at Once was great.
Haven't seen it.
It's good. It's worth watching. It's also just all these things are like, there's just been a lot of stuff that was like fun, and that's part of my problem with The Bear, was like I was not having fun. It was very like, it wanted to make you think and feel sad and also sometimes laugh, but in a grim way. I don't know. It totally tonally did not click with me.
Bear was awesome. You're wrong.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, cool. I got nothing else.
Did you watch Hustle? The Adam Sandler basketball movie?
No.
That's the last movie I remember watching. Super entertaining, super breezy movie to watch. Like a million NBA and like basketball world cameos.
It is hard to have pitched things in a way that is less interesting to me than Adam Sandler basketball, bunch of NBA cameos, but fair.
Yeah.
I'll check it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's that's true. Like if you don't have any appreciation for Anthony Edwards, not the actor, the basketball player, then like you might not enjoy like his performance in this movie, which is just like a breakout.
I can only picture the actor. I don't even know what Anthony Edwards, the basketball player, looks or sounds like. So.
He was the number one overall pick 2 or 3 years ago, and he's like kind of made the leap last season. He'll probably be an All-NBA player this year. And like for the next decade, if you were going to like redraft the league, he would be like a top five, top 10 pick.
Really?
In the movie, more or less playing himself, but he's like the world's best shit talker. The lead in the movie is actually a NBA player. I think his name is like Juancho Hernandez or something. But he's like the lead and had never acted before. And he's in it a ton. And he's great. Like he's obviously awesome at basketball, but he's like, you know, good in the part, great looking, you know, like looks like an actor, but 6'8".
Nice.
And yeah, just like, it's just a well-done movie. Again, not winning Academy Awards, but, you know, nice way to spend a Wednesday night.
Yeah, maybe I'll give it a shot. You've made a compelling case for it, more so than for The Bear, which is still ponderous and self-serious. I'm sorry.
I can't believe you didn't like The Bear. Jesus. I know.
It's real.
The soundtrack alone. So heavy on the 90s.
Yeah, the soundtrack was good. That and my complete and utter indifference to Better Call Saul are really the ones that I keep getting hammered on whenever I mention them to people.
Yeah, I finished it. My problem with Better Call Saul is I respect it and enjoy it, but I don't remember like the whole narrative arc of the Breaking Bad universe of the last like 12 years well enough to know like what the hell I'm watching. Like 30% of the time.
Yeah,
I'll be like, who's that character that just showed up? Oh, they were in like season 2 of Breaking Bad for 3 episodes. No recollection of that.
I would have that problem also if I'd stuck with it. I similar to what you said about the show as a whole, I respect Bob Odenkirk. I know a lot of my friends adore his work. He just does not, I don't connect with him at all. With The Bear, one thing I will say is when the main character is on screen, I'm like, this guy's cool. I want to watch this guy. I want to hang out with this guy while he's on screen. I don't have that feeling with Bob Odenkirk.
That's the opposite.
Yeah. That made Better Call Saul, as he's on screen like 85% of the time, it made it a bit of a reach for me. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm trying to think what else. Oh, this has been a great year for every single musician that I like. Is touring or has toured. It's just a wonderful year for that. I'm seeing both The War on Drugs and My Morning Jacket in Wilmington this month, which is incredible. Bands like that don't come to Wilmington.
We are such cliches because I am seeing Sunny Day Real Estate this month in Silver Spring, Maryland. So we are really living our most stereotypical lives here, my friend.
Fuck out of here with that emo bullshit.
Whatever. I'm sorry that they didn't grow into proper dad rock like everybody else. They're just playing the emo hits.
Someone described them as emo once and I was out. Any band that gets the emo descriptor, I'm out. I don't even know why exactly. I just can't do emo.
I will say that they were the first band I ever heard described as emo. I know the earlier history. Don't at me. And I heard it in 95, so I just sort of accepted them as emo, and I was like, this is an emo band. I must like emo music. Then it turned out, did not, in fact, like emo music, but whatever. I
like
them.
Like the one genre that I am like that with. I don't know why. It's like I can't even explain it, because I don't know. I like pretty much all forms of rock and roll, but not emo.
Yeah, I don't know if I have a genre that I single-handedly dismiss outright, but... I'm sure I do. I'm just not thinking of it.
Have fun at the Sunny Day Show.
I will. You would listen. You just chill and relax at your My Morning Jacket show or whatever. Okay. Just
the War on Drugs, the best band in the world.
But I love the fact that both of these shows, while we're giving each other hard time, are both going to be 90% white guys with beards and hooded sweatshirts, like almost entirely. So there's that.
So many dads. The babysitter economy is going to be booming.
as we come through this pandemic, everybody is fortunate the dads have somewhere to go.
All right, buddy. Well, I will probably talk to you after week one.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Okay, see you.
Bye.